And a good Tuesday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget, you can take the show with you 24-7 by checking out the show in your favorite podcast app. Just search for the Nick Craig Show, tap the subscribe or follow button, and you'll get a new show delivered to your smartphone or tablet each and every weekday morning. It's the Nick Craig Show. Check it out in your favorite podcast app. You can also be part of the program this morning. You can text in to the program at 910-377-6425. That's 910-377-6425. And you can, of course, leave comments on our live feeds this morning. Well, there's been a lot of talk, a lot of conversation. You've, of course, been hearing about this. It's been well discussed and tracked over the last couple of weeks and months now about diversity, equity, and inclusion. Right, this is something that the Trump administration and really I think America as a whole, and I think it's important to draw that and lay that out, that both the administration and the country seem to be aligned on diversity, equity, and inclusion. These programs, these practices are incredibly detrimental. They pit people against each other based on things like their skin color, their religion, their race, all of these issues, their gender, whatever it might be. It's incredibly divisive. It's incredibly destructive. And this administration has made a key effort and continues to do so day in and day out to dismantle these discriminatory programs, because that's exactly what they are. They are discriminatory programs that prioritize individuals based on things like whether they are a minority, whether they are a woman, whether they are black or white. It's incredibly discriminatory, just on face value. And there's been two recent examples of this in North Carolina as it relates to hurricane relief. First, we'll start off with the small business grant program out of Buncombe County. I put this back out on my X account back in January. By the way, if you're not following me over on X, you should do so. It's at Nicholas M. Craig on X. You can follow me over there. But this is what it looked like. This is a slide deck, a screenshot from the slide deck from Buncombe County back in January when they announced this grant program. And it says the small business support model, the eligibility, small businesses impacted by Hurricane Helene, less than 25 employees. They have the business to be eligible has the ability to demonstrate retention or rehiring of employees, the ability to retain employees for 6 months from grant award, and all industries eligible to apply, no specific focus for the grant. However, there is three focus areas that the county in Buncombe County, which hosts the city of Asheville, had. The first was BIPOC-owned businesses. The second, woman-owned businesses, and the third, sole proprietorships. So of those focus areas, two of them are specifically focusing on diversity, equity, and inclusion. BIPOC and women-owned businesses. So that's what Buncombe County was doing, and that's not really a surprise or shock. You are well aware Asheville, this area of the state, is incredibly liberal, incredibly progressive in the way in which they operate. So this was what Buncombe County was doing. We then look at the city of Asheville in a similar program that they are offering through the city to provide relief to businesses. And their slide deck, their presentation, it's about a 125-page document nested between pages 75 and 76. It reads this: within the small business support program, the city will prioritize assistance for minority and women-owned businesses within the scoring criteria outlined within the policies and procedures. So you've got both Buncombe County and the city of Asheville, which are independent. They're, of course, in the same area, but they are independent entities, both of them prioritizing Hurricane Helene recovery and relief to minority and women-owned businesses. This is what diversity, equity, and inclusion has gotten us. And when I say the programs are incredibly divisive and destructive, this is what I'm talking about. This might be a newsflash to some folks on the left. Hurricane Helene did not discriminate against individuals based on their skin color. Hurricane Helene did not discriminate against individuals based on their gender. The storm wreaked havoc and hell across Western North Carolina, regardless of who you were, how much money you made, what your background was, what your job was. It was irrelevant. The natural disaster wreaked havoc and hell for that area of the state. And so when the city of Asheville and Buncombe County release these programs and start discussing this grant making under the lens of, well, we've got to make sure that we're focusing on businesses owned by women. We've got to make sure that we are focusing on businesses owned by individuals that they deem to be minorities. Why would you do that? The storm affected everybody living in the western half of North Carolina. This was not an issue that was unburdened, was had a higher level of burden if you were a woman or if you were a if part of the BIPOC community. So why would this be part of the grant making? And the answer is very simple. This is the left's attempt at diversity, equity, and inclusion. They feel the need. They feel that they have a moral obligation to take their wacko progressive leftist policies and bring them into every facet of government. We're talking about hurricane relief. And for whatever reason, the progressive left believes that it's important to discriminate against individuals based on their sex and based on their skin color. I don't subscribe to that idea. I don't subscribe to that ideology, but the city of Asheville and Buncombe County do. The far-left progressive radicals that are elected in both of those entities believe it is important to discriminate against individuals when it, in regards to hurricane relief. So when you hear folks on the right talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, why it needs to be stripped out, why it needs to be dismantled, this is what we're talking about. This is the real-life example of how diversity, equity, and inclusion does exactly the opposite of what its stated name is and what its stated goal is. Because the left has weaponized this terminology, DEI, the acronym, they have weaponized it to fit a political agenda. They have weaponized it to pick winners and losers based on things that you don't have any control over. You don't have any control over what your race is. You don't have any control over what gender you were born as. You don't have control over that. Yet, the city of Asheville, Buncombe County, want to pick winners and losers based on that criteria. Incredibly, incredibly destructive, incredibly, incredibly divisive. I've got some good news to pass along to you this morning. The U.S. Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, Scott Turner, has ended Asheville's plan to distribute hurricane funding relief based on diversity, equity, and inclusion. Scott Turner was on Fox News. He was on Brian Kilmeade's One Nation program over the weekend, and Brian Kilmeade asked him about what's going on with DEI at HUD, and he brought up in regards to hurricane relief here in North Carolina. Here's the Secretary of HUD speaking this weekend with Brian Kilmeade. Take a listen.
Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, Scott Turner. Mr. Secretary, great to see you. What do you have to tell our audience about what you discovered just 30 days in?
Well, thank you, Brian. It's so great to be with you and the American people this morning. So we have found, as you said, $260 million in savings here at HUD, working with our DOGE task force. But today we're announcing that we cut $4 million in DEI contracts here at HUD, which were supposed to be for culture transformation and mindset, outward mindset thinking and subscription services. So we want to announce today, you know, we're working hard and we will cut $4 million in DEI-focused contracts. This is money that should go to serve the American people and also time well spent to serve the people we're called to serve. And so, you know, DEI here at HUD is dead, Brian.
So, I mean, right off the bat there, you've got DEI programs across HUD being cut, $4 million worth of savings. Phenomenal stuff there from the secretary. More on him.
True. And that's one thing the president made clear when he was running for office, and he did it right away when he got in. But the question I get from a lot of people is, okay, now that you saved it, I know it's in the department's interest to use that money and repurpose it. but maybe it's in the country's interest to save it. So do you write a check to the federal, to somebody else and say, okay, take this money? Do you take it out of your account that's allocated? How do you put that back into the system?
Well, so, and that's a great question. You know, and in addition to this $260 million in savings, we also found $1.9 billion in misplaced funds. And those funds were supposed to be used for administrative services that help us carry out the services here at HUD. And when you don't use those funds, they don't just go to the next year. You're supposed to notify the Department of Treasury that these funds are now available for other federal expenditures. And that did not happen. It was great mismanagement and negligence over the past few years from the Biden administration. So now that we've found this $1.9 billion, we can notify and we have de-obligated these funds, to answer your question, so that the Treasury Department can use those for other federal expenditures for the American people.
And even paying down the debt. President Trump signed an executive order ending all federal taxpayer benefits for illegal immigrants and orders all federal agencies and departments to identify federally funded programs like you're doing. So that was that is already impacting HUD, correct?
Yes. And, you know, it's really common sense. And under President Trump's leadership, the hard-earned money of American taxpayers, that money should go to serve the American people. And that's what we're going to do here at HUD, to ensure that we're deliberate and detailed about the expenditures that we have to serve the American people.
Mr. Secretary, I'm up against a break, but just real quick, the purchase of corporate housing by people like, you know, BlackRock,
So I'll stop it there. So as you heard there from the secretary, he said, once again, let me be clear, DEI is dead at HUD. And the grants that are in question this morning, the grant in Buncombe County, the grant in Asheville, well, a lot of that money was coming from HUD. That was coming from the federal government to do a, well, I say a simple task, but a relatively simple task. Come up with a grant to support businesses. In this case, this is what Asheville and Buncombe County were doing, to support businesses that were devastated and severely affected by Hurricane Helene. I mean, it's just, it's phenomenal to hear, is it not? Turner said, HUD is looking forward to helping thousands of North Carolinians rebuild after Hurricane Helene by directing funding assistance to impacted businesses, nonprofit organizations, and neighborhoods. However, Asheville's draft application plan incorporated DEI criteria to prioritize some impacted residents over others, which was unacceptable. After HUD informed Asheville that its plan was unsatisfactory and it would not be approved, the city assured us that it was updating its draft action plan to be compliant. That's how things are done. HUD allocated $225 million in a community development block grant in January under the Biden administration after Hurricane Helene ripped through the state in September of last year, devastating thousands of residents, most notably in the western Appalachian region, with flooding, high winds, power outages, and the complete destruction of communities, with at least 106 people dying in North Carolina during the storm. So HUD put this money out there, $225 million, and you had far-left progressive governments like Buncombe County, like the city of Asheville, that took it upon themselves to craft the criteria, to craft this grant-making criteria that actively discriminated against individuals. I mean, it's just, it's absurd. The Secretary of HUD continued by saying, quote, "At HUD, we are taking a detailed and deliberate approach in every aspect of our work to ensure that we are serving all communities, regardless of race, color, or creed. Let this send a clear message that no detail will go unnoticed. Adherence to President Trump's executive order is mandatory. We appreciate that Asheville has reversed course and is now working with us to get it right." And this, of course, prompted a response from the Democratic mayor of Asheville, Mayor Esther Mannheimer, who said that she was, quote, "working closely with HUD as they continue to navigate the situation." This prompted an interview with WLOS News with the Asheville mayor. This interview took place late last week, and here is the Asheville mayor being interviewed on said topic, on these grants, and how this is going to go forward with HUD. Here's the Asheville mayor with the WLOS News last week.
Secretary Turner's comments today, and I guess over the last few days, he had mentioned that city's been super responsive since he sort of said these things. What have y'all been discussing?
Yes, we heard from the HUD secretary that we needed to edit our what's called our action plan, which is a document that HUD requires that we submit before we can receive HUD funding for disaster relief. And this is money that's on top of what FEMA's already providing for repair and recovery. It was anticipated we would receive these monies, and still is, around the summer, of about $225 million. So we have modified the action plan to reflect his concerns, and we've been told we're the changes that we made are acceptable.
So I'm going to stop it right there. I mean, that's exactly how this needs to go down. There is a new administration in Washington, D.C. There is a new sheriff in town, for lack of a better term. And Trump has made it his objective. And he has obviously laid this out for his cabinet secretaries, including Scott Turner, who leads HUD, that this is how we need to go forward. We need to cut these programs out. And fortunately, smartly, by the city of Asheville, they have decided that they need to play ball. Right? See, this is the impact that the federal government can have, right? When we talk about how much impact from Washington, D.C. can trickle down, when these municipalities, when these cities, these counties are receiving federal funds through HUD or any other department, it really doesn't matter what the department is, when they can receive these federal dollars and are slated to receive large amounts of money, $225 million is not a small chunk of change. The federal government determines what that money needs to be used for. And if what the city of Asheville is doing, what Buncombe County is doing, if that is in objection to the administration, the city of Asheville has two options. They can either change and course correct and come in line with the administration or sacrifice the funds. I mean, it's really pretty simple. They are left with two options, either play ball with the administration or find the money somewhere else. And in the case of the city of Asheville, props to the mayor, who, of course, spearheaded this operation. But they understand that their communities will not survive without this money. So they smartly are coming in line with the federal government. Now, to say this up front, this should have never been in there in the first place. But props to this administration, props to the HUD secretary, for digging into the details of what Asheville submitted and cutting this garbage straight out. But props to HUD for looking and taking a microscope or a magnifying glass to this thing and combing over it and coming up with, this is the way forward. You guys are not going to be able to get the grant with these things in the program. You are not going to be able to discriminate against business owners in Asheville, in Buncombe County, without somebody saying something about it. You're just not going to be able to do it with our money. Right, because it's not HUD's money. It's not Asheville's money. It's the residents of the United States' money. It's taxpayer dollars from all over the country, who I think sent a pretty clear message in November of last year that the days of diversity, equity, inclusion are done. The status quo that has been pushed forward by the left and these discriminatory programs is over with. And again, the option is simple. You either play along or you forfeit the funds. It's really that simple. More from the mayor of Asheville.
The changes have already been made.
As far as I know, yes. I mean, it's just a matter of editing the document. It's a very long document, and this was apparently a reference deep into the document on page 76 that they wanted to have changed.
Concerning minority and women-owned businesses.
Right. So the city, like many cities, has a program around contracting with minority and women-owned businesses, and so apparently the reference to that existing program is not something that they want to see in the action plan.
And Chuck Edwards said, and you just said, that it doesn't sound like there's any risk of the funding being pulled. That's what it sounds like to you.
Yes, we're being reassured. They're very eager, and they continue to be eager, this administration, to help support the recovery of Western North Carolina, including Asheville, and we're very appreciative of that. And in fact, continuing the conversation about how else we can receive assistance, because I think we're going to need more than what's already been allocated to Western North Carolina for recovery. And we're hopeful to see some additional programs come online that'll address things like private roads and bridges and revenue loss for cities and counties. So some other programs that we still need some help with.
And the language was obviously, they used the term DEI, but it was inclusive in nature. Do you guys feel that you can still do those things even though the language is changing a bit?
You know, that will be seen. My understanding is, I mean, not to get into the weeds, but my understanding is that the order that's at issue that the president signed is in litigation. So just like every other city in America, we're kind of waiting to hear what happens with all of the lawsuits and the changes and the requirements as to how we're able to carry out our functions. But our primary focus is on the recovery of Asheville and Western North Carolina. And so we think we can do that work to its maximum with the funds that were provided.
You know, and I appreciate the comments there from the mayor. But really, is your goal, is your objective to provide that relief and provide that recovery? Because within your own grant application, you were indicating that it was not about providing recovery for every person. You were indicating that depending on your skin color, depending on your gender or your sex, you were going to be treated differently in regards to this $225 million coming in from HUD. And I don't know why this has to even be restated, but I find that to be unacceptable. Again, you're talking about a natural disaster that does not discriminate. You're talking about a once in a lifetime storm that does not discriminate against individuals, regardless of their background. It just doesn't. So why would you put this in your application? And again, I think the answer is pretty clear. It's these cities, these municipalities that are controlled almost exclusively by the far left, by these progressive radicals, feel that they have some moral obligation to operate in this manner. A great comment coming in this morning on our Rumble chat from Aqua Blue saying, but make sure we follow up to make sure that they still don't discriminate when actually handing out the money. Well, and that's exactly the case. And fortunately, you're going to have an administration. You're having a secretary in Scott Turner over at HUD that seems to be fully in line. I mean, you just heard his comments with Brian Kilmeade, fully in line with the president's agenda, fully in line with his executive order over diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so, you know, this attempt, and you're going to see a lot of this over the next couple of years. This attempt to disband DEI from the public sense while things still happen behind the scenes, you can guarantee that HUD and these other federal agencies are going to be looking very close at the actual makeup of these programs. Because there's no question about it. The left, the progressives that want to push this agenda forward, they'll just masquerade it under a different name. They won't claim in their document that they're prioritizing women-owned businesses or minority-owned businesses, right? They'll remove it from the PowerPoint. They'll remove it from the application documents. But it's a very good point this morning in the Rumble chat that how do we actually make sure that they do what they say they're going to do? And that comes down to accountability and transparency. Right now, it's Sunshine Week across the state of North Carolina, well, across the nation, but here in North Carolina as well. And the whole purpose of this week is to increase transparency within government, increase accountability within government. And so if Asheville or Buncombe County, and I'm not saying that they're intending to do this, but if Asheville decides that they're still going to attempt to discriminate against certain business owners in this grant program, that will come out. That will be, it'll either come out from a whistleblower or somebody will bring this to the forefront. And if they are still found that they are not operating in the manner in which the federal government has told them they need to operate, that money will be stripped. That money will be pulled. And so this leaves a very interesting question for the progressive left, the individuals making these decisions. What is more important? What's more important? Pushing forward diversity, equity, and inclusion policies, or guaranteeing the safety and the security of a $225 million grant for residents of the city of Asheville? That's the question that they have to ask themselves. Is it worth putting this risk, putting this grant at risk to push forward our ideology? Now, unfortunately, in many cases, I think the answer is probably going to be yes. It is worth risking the grant. It is worth risking the federal dollars so we can continue to push our political narrative forward. I'm hopeful. I don't know much about the mayor of Asheville. I've, of course, read and seen a lot of comments from her over the last 6 months or so since Helene devastated that area of the state. I don't know much about her other than that. But I would suspect if she is competent at her job, if she is truly a good leader for the city of Asheville, she will direct her staff that we are not even going to come close to even giving the perception that we are still operating under some of these DEI policies. Because one thing I can tell you is that if Asheville kind of tries to do this stuff behind the scenes, if Asheville removes it from the criteria, but they're still picking winners and losers based on these DEI criterias, and it's found out, that money will immediately be pulled away. HUD will come in the next day or the same day and strip that money out of the city of Asheville. Yeah, I can guarantee you that's the case. This administration is not fooling around. This administration is done playing with it. To borrow a line from now former radio host, now the deputy director of the FBI, Dan Bongino, cutesy time is over. If the left wants to try and push their luck on this stuff, if they want to try and gamble with a $225 million grant, they're going to FAFO pretty quickly. The FO part of that is going to happen very rapidly. This administration ain't fooling around. So these groups have got to be very careful in the way in which they operate. And unfortunately, it's going to take an example being made. But see, there's a downside of that. Let's just, for argument's sakes here, play out that the city of Asheville still tries to do some of this DEI stuff behind the scenes. And they're caught. And HUD comes in and says, we told you guys, you're not allowed to operate in this manner. You're not allowed to have these criteria. You're still doing it anyway. You're now masquerading and hiding it from the public. We're taking the money away. While that's a win for the administration, while that's a win for dismantling of DEI, that is a huge loss for the residents of Asheville that need this money. That is a huge loss for the businesses of Western North Carolina that desperately need this relief, desperately need these funds. And that's why I mentioned and I brought up, it's going to be very interesting to see how these cities, how these towns, how these counties operate. Are they willing to put this money at risk? Is their ideology so important that they're willing to flush copious amounts of money potentially down the toilet so that they can go and high-five each other on how good of a progressive they are? So they can high-five each other, oh, look at how liberal I am. I gave it to the man. We still did this thing anyway. We got away with it, or we're attempting to get away with it. This is going to be very interesting to follow. And this, of course, Asheville and Western North Carolina is where this discussion is happening this morning based on this news that was made. But you are going to see similar efforts all over the place, right? Because anybody now that is receiving federal dollars is going to have to be incredibly careful with what they're doing. Whether that's school systems, states, cities, counties, grant programs, I mean, really any federal dollars, with this executive order from the Trump administration, they are not allowed to use DEI criteria. There are a lot of policies being rewritten right now. And unfortunately, some examples are going to have to be made for the left to take this seriously. People are going to have to be hurt, unfortunately, due to the radical ideology that is put forward by these individuals before something changes. This is a great first step. I appreciate the secretary's comments. I think the mayor handled herself pretty well in her response to it. Of course, she brings up, well, you know, there's still active litigation going on, and you know, we're not exactly sure. No, the active litigation or not, you were told, don't screw around with this. Remove this stuff from the program, or you're going to lose the money. They don't want to do that. I can promise you, Asheville does not want to do that. I really hope they don't. We'll keep an eye on it right here on the Nick Craig Show. There's more details this morning, a story from Katie Zender over at CarolinaJournal.com that kind of walks through the secretary's comments, the response from the mayor of Asheville, all of that over at CarolinaJournal.com this morning. Well, a major phone call is going to be taking place this afternoon. Not often that a phone call makes national news, but we do have this was tweeted out by RT, which is a Russian news operation, tweeted out this morning that between 9 and 11 o'clock Eastern time this morning, there will, in fact, be a phone call between Russian President Vladimir Putin and U.S. President Donald Trump. It's happening between 16 and 1800 hours Moscow time. That's 9 to 11 this morning. And depending on what the results of this phone call are, we could be looking at, of course, the end, or at least the beginning of the end, for the war that continues between Ukraine and Russia. There's been a lot of chatter, a lot of talk over the last couple of days about a 30-day ceasefire deal. Reports where Russia wasn't in favor, then they were. I would pay any amount of money. I would drain my savings account to listen into this phone call this morning. I would give anything to hear this phone call. Because you can guarantee that the Russian president, Vladimir Putin, is going to try and bully Trump, bully the United States in this ceasefire agreement. And I suspect Trump is not going to put up with it. The same way he didn't put up with Zelensky's crap when he was here a couple weeks ago, Trump's going to operate the exact same way with Putin. Trump wants this war to end, probably more than anybody else. He's the only one that's actually doing anything substantial to make it happen. Right? This war has been going on for, what, 3 years now? Now, of course, the EU and the UK, all of these great European countries are all of a sudden coalescing around Vladimir Zelensky after he was laughed out of the Oval Office back a couple weeks ago. Where have these guys been for 3 years? None of those other countries could put together some peace talks? Nobody else could negotiate a ceasefire deal? No, the answer is of course not, because none of them are strong leaders. It took Donald Trump getting reelected to begin this process. And I don't know how quickly we're going to find out about this phone call. I'm sure there will be some unnamed anonymous sources that provide some information after it takes place this morning. But I'm going to be very curious how this call goes. And I can promise you this. If Putin does not appear that he is interested in these peace agreements at all, it's not going to be, or this ceasefire agreement, it won't be a 2-hour phone call. Trump is not going to sit on the phone for 2 hours if he cannot get concessions out of Russia, out of Vladimir Putin. It's just not going to happen. Trump actually wants this war to end. And Ukraine seems, after their little flub a couple weeks ago, the president there, they've kind of come back to reality, come back to earth on this. They understand that this ceasefire needs to start. It needs to be the first step. And with that, this is going to be a very interesting phone call that takes place this morning. Should have, maybe we'll get some details while it's going on, maybe some leaked sources, some leaked information. I'm not exactly sure, but hopefully when all is said and done, there is an announcement from this administration either today or within the next couple of days on at least a 30-day ceasefire deal between Russia and Ukraine, and then begin the process of talking about how do you actually end this war. This is what peace through strength looks like. This is the difference between having a strong leader and a weak leader. Joe Biden had never opened the dialogue between himself and the Russian president. He never did. He did not talk to the Russian president once since the minor incursion, as he called it, Joe Biden did, since the minor incursion between Russia and Ukraine. He'd never opened the line of communication. Why would he not want to talk to the Russian president? Why would Joe Biden not want to get this situation under control? Well, I think there's a couple of reasons. First, he was essentially brain dead, so he had no cognitive ability to actually negotiate and guarantee and try and beat some concessions into both of these countries, both Russia and Ukraine. He had no ability to do that at all. And secondly, well, as we've seen now, all of the money that the United States was giving to Ukraine, well, only half of that was accounted for. So where was the rest of that money going? Was somebody pocketing that cash? Was somebody skimming off the top or bottom of that? It seems like that might be the case. So maybe there wasn't an incentive for Joe Biden and the Democrats to end the war. That's taking place again at 9 o'clock this morning. I'll track the details throughout the day, and we'll have some news to bring to you tomorrow morning right here on the Nick Craig Show. Speaking of coming back to Earth, well, after being stranded in space for 9 months, U.S. astronauts Butch Wilmore and Suni Williams are finally on their way back to our great planet as they departed the International Space Station early this morning to begin their long-awaited journey back home after spending more than 9 months in space. The splashdown is expected around 6 p.m. tonight when the SpaceX's Crew Dragon capsule, which is called Freedom, is set to re-enter the Earth's atmosphere coming up tonight. The stranded pair, who were originally supposed to be in space for only 10 days last summer, are traveling home with fellow American Nick Haig and Russian cosmonaut, not going to attempt to pronounce his name, as they finish their tour on the Crew 9 mission. Wilmore and Williams have been stuck on the ISS since last June when their Boeing Starliner capsule suffered leaks and mechanical issues, forcing NASA to return the craft without anybody on board. The episode left Boeing's commercial spacecraft and space flight ambitions tumbling, with SpaceX serving as the only backup available to help bring the astronauts home. The duo have since had to wait to hitch a ride with this SpaceX crew capsule, which is scheduled to launch only after, or which was scheduled to launch only after SpaceX's crew 10 arrived over the weekend to relieve them of their duties at the ISS. Elon Musk has claimed that the plan to bring home Wilmore and Williams back earlier were shelved by the former president Joe Biden, and that the mission had been marred by political mudsling. You know, this news came out a couple of weeks ago that Elon Musk and SpaceX attempted to try and rescue these individuals early. They've been in space for 9 freaking months. And because of Elon Musk's political ties to Donald Trump, the administration, the previous administration, did not want to give Elon Musk a win. They did not want to give the guy working with Elon Musk, Donald Trump, they did not want to give them a win. So here's the Dragon spacecraft undocking, or shortly after it undocked from the space station yesterday. You can see it floating through space. And again, it is set to land and make its plunge into the Atlantic Ocean off the coast of Florida around 6 o'clock tonight. What a remarkable feat of engineering. Boeing's space program, I would suspect, is essentially done at this point. They've had 9 months to figure out how the hell to get these people back and have done nothing. Elon Musk wanted to do it months ago, but because of political ideology. I mean, just think about this. And this really can't be understated. Just think about this at its root level. You had a private entity in SpaceX that had the ability to rescue these astronauts. But things have become so hyper-political. Things have become so over-the-top political that they didn't want to let Elon Musk do it. They thought it would be politically detrimental to their team in the 2024 presidential election to give Elon Musk that win. How despicable and disgusting is that? I mean, when you really boil it down, that's the current status of politics in America. You've got somebody who has the ability to rescue two Americans that were stranded by Boeing on the International Space Station, and you just can't do it. You won't do it. You won't give SpaceX, you won't give Elon Musk the opportunity. Now, of course, new administration, that administration happens to be one in which Elon Musk is affiliated with. He makes his same offer again, and lo and behold, coming up tonight, coming up in less than 12 hours, all four of those people will be back on soil, back on U.S. soil. Why have things gotten to this level? Why are we at a point right now where we are willing to leave Americans stranded in space because it might not be in favor of our political party? That is a really, really sad sign of the times. That is a really, really detrimental place to be. We've got to do something to bring down the political pressures that our country is dealing with right now. I don't have all of the answers. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I do. But if that is not the greatest example of how political infighting, political partisanship, how it is detrimental to us as a society, as a whole, I don't know what else you need to see. So looking forward to watching that tonight and getting those individuals. I'm sure they were supposed to be in space for 10 days. I'm sure after 9 months, they will be more than happy to land in the United States and get everything back and operational. So we'll track those details as well and keep an eye on it right here on the Nick Craig Show. I want to remind you that if you are interested in getting access to things like our daily show notes and more exclusive content, including our monthly Zoom call, which happens with our Patreon subscribers, that'll be taking place next week. You should head on over to patreon.com/Nick Craig, where you can get access to all of that. $5, $10 a month, or you could set a custom amount as well if you're so inclined to do so. Appreciate everybody that has come aboard and supported the show on Patreon over the last 2 months. It's been quite the endeavor here on the show. It is greatly appreciated. Well, once again, a little bit shorter this morning. I will be filling in for the great Pete Callender this afternoon on WBT Radio. You can check that out from 12 to 3 p.m. live on WBT, or just search for the Pete Callender Show podcast. We are back with you tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. on YouTube, Rumble, and X on the Nick Craig Show, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great Tuesday.